Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Wednesday, the 7th of August. Very nice to have you with us. 13 minutes past 9 o'clock. Let me introduce everybody to you, and then we'll remind you first that you can join in on the conversation by simply writing to us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We have a lot to discuss. We'll do that with our panel, and here we go. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing good. I went to see Natalie last night in the fabulous Mahawi Theater in Great Barrington, and she was just unbelievably good. And I got to say, our Natalie, there's nothing like her.
Well, that's terrific. I'm glad you had a great time. And cool event. I know she's doing some summer night performances. So that's really cool. Good stuff going around. We also have Berkshire Eagle reporter Jen Smith. Good morning, Jen. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well. How are you?
Well, fine. Fine. Last we talked to you, you had just won a major contest to go to India as part of Atlas Obscura, and now you have to actually make that happen. So
yep.
Good for you. Yeah, work on trying to get out of the country and be able to get back.
The adventure has already begun in that regard.
Yes, it's already, your journey has already begun, yes. Well, good morning. Wonderful to have you here. Times Union columnist Chris Churchill joins us. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
And the Dean of College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Security, and Cybersecurity at the University at Albany, Bob Griffin. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, everybody.
What could we possibly find to talk to you about today? Well, we have a lot. Good morning. Let's begin with the news, and which is what we do here on the roundtable and the panel. And we talk about in relationship to the shootings in both El Paso and in Dayton, that now there seems to be some momentum when it comes to bipartisan support for red flag gun control. These bills are picking up momentum even within the GOP in the Congress. Under intense pressure to respond to this week's massacres, congressional Republicans are coalescing around legislation to help law enforcement take guns from those who pose an imminent danger, a measure that, if signed into law, would be the most significant gun control legislation enacted in two decades. Such red flag laws might not be as momentous or controversial as the now-expired assault weapons ban or the instant background check system, both of which were enacted in 1994 as part of President Bill Clinton's sprawling crime bill. The House, under Democratic control, passed far more ambitious bills in February that would require background checks for all gun purchasers, including those on the internet or at gun shows, and extend waiting limits for would-be gun buyers flagged by the instant check system. But those bills have run into a blockade, that blockade being Senator Mitch McConnell, the majority leader, who has he has put up a wall for those bills that he opposes. Now, after the back-to-back shootings this weekend left 31 people dead in El Paso and Dayton, Republicans who have long resisted gun restrictions appear rattled. So, we've all heard the story, I think, about Governor Mike DeWine of Ohio, who was shouted down on Sunday by mourners in Dayton demanding that he, quote, do something. On Tuesday, he urged his fellow Republicans in the state legislature to pass measures establishing red flag powers and expanding background checks. So, Alan, we'll go with you, and then we'll move around the room here.
Well, first of all, I think we should all be very clear that when the majority leader, Mitch McConnell, refuses to let them vote, he's refusing to let them vote because they don't want to vote. If his conference wanted it, they'd get it. So he is basically, they are basically complicit with him. And I think that's very important for all of us to remember. It's not just mean old Mitch. He's all mean old, right? And he is old. But it is not just mean old Mitch. It's the Republican majority in the Senate. And that is what we have to keep our eye on. And the fact that they are rattled and they're going to say to him, okay, now it's time to let it up. He will, of course, because they're the power. He doesn't have the power. Otherwise, they'd be out. I think that's real important. The two things that are being considered aren't enough, but there's something. You know, if a mother in the house says, my kid's threatening me and he's got a gun and red flag, it makes a great deal of sense to allow that on a national level. I think that's clear. But we can go a lot further than these bills are.
Just so we have some definitional baseline here, red flag laws are state laws that authorize courts to issue a special type of protection order allowing the police to temporarily confiscate firearms from people who are deemed by a judge to be a danger to themselves or others. Often the request for the order will come from relatives or friends concerned about a loved one who owns one or more guns and has expressed suicidal thoughts or discussed shooting people. The authorities may also request an order. Bob.
Yeah, I mean, and my concern with the red flag rules, if it's state to state, that still leaves huge gaps. And I really do think this is a question of federal law that has got to be put in place. Mm-hmm. This morning on CNN, I thought our governor, Andrew Cuomo, did a wonderful job in sort of laying out four basic points that he thought were just core to gun control. He talked about the issue of mental health. He talked about banning military and military-style weapons. He talked about the red flag rules, and he talked about universal backgrounds, and I thought he did as good a job as I've seen since the shootings this weekend. Where Alan and I are in complete agreement is there is, I think, a level of panic in at both the Republicans and the Democrats sort of realizing that they have to do something. That people are at the breaking point. And if anyone saw the news out of Times Square last night, you start to see where a backfiring from a motorcycle created a stampede panic. We really need to do something, and it needs to be done now. And I hope this isn't just another one of these situations where they talk and talk and talk and let it slide.
Yeah, I do too. I agree with you. I think it's. It should have been obvious a long time ago, but it's obvious now that we just can't live this way. You know, I mean, the mental toll and the stress and the anguish that this is taking on all of us and, on our kids. I mean, first graders mm-hmm. get active shooter training in school. I mean, I don't think that's the way anybody wants to live. And I think everybody realizes that there's a big problem here. I mean, it's largely, or it's at least partly guns, but there's also cultural issues. There's all sorts of things that are contributing to this. And, things have to change.
That's absolutely the big factor. I mean, from my personal experience, I grew up, I was in high school and in school when Columbine happened. I've covered the Boston Marathon bombing. I've covered Sandy Hook, and it doesn't stop. Last year, we had nearly two dozen school shootings, and that's just school shootings alone. Missing from this conversation, painfully so across the country, is the ongoing gun violence in Chicago, which happened within the same time frame that, so many places are still not reporting about, and that's a problem. I think, again, separating the different issues and not making them federal issues is a huge problem, because if you really want the nation as a whole to move forward, you have to move forward on mutually agreed upon legislation, and it can't just be piecemeal together, and it has to be hand in hand with research. It has to be a public health issue. I know Libby Post earlier this week had referenced a group in the U.S. That's done it. It's called Affirm Research, and it's actually a local connection, which I found out because you have awesome listeners here, and they write into me now sometimes. And there's Christopher Barsotti, who's from Pownell, Vermont, who's heading up this research effort to end the epidemic of gun violence in our nation. But they need to be validated. Their research and the CDC needs to be authorized to collect data on that. And we do need, if you're going to pass these kinds of laws, you have to uphold these kinds of laws. And, we have database issues. We don't have enough staff who are watching for these red flags, because with every incident, we hear constant testimony on throughout the media and social media of how, this person always seemed this to me or that to me. So it seems like we're constantly missing red flags. So, what do you do?
No one law is going to solve the problem, mm-hmm. right? But, it's a step forward. And if it stops at least a few, then it's a step worth taking.
But there's an interesting side note there on the issue of research. And if you look at what CDC and the Department of Justice through the National Institute of Justice and even with the Department of Homeland Security, the funding for research that would sort of be able to wrap in this conversation in good science has been systematically cut for the last 10 to 15 years. And this has been I'll put this right on the plate of the NRA and their allies in Congress, where even after Sandy Hook and some of these other catastrophes that should have triggered a stronger reaction from our political leadership, they were still blocking basic research that would have delved into the problem of gun violence and the nexus with mental health and all of those issues that would have helped us create better policies. And that's why the whole subsystem under this policy consideration is so weak right now.
And
Can I just say that, Bob, the one thing that bothers me about that analysis, and I have incredible respect, as you know, for you, is that somehow we separate the president as a, quote, political leader from the NRA. The president is in it over his head, up to his neck. So I think, when we're assigning responsibility here, sure, the NRA is, a powerful lobby group and the rest of it, but it is this president who has created this mess. And I think we should never take our eyes off of that.
My only disagreement, Alan, is that, and I don't disagree with what you're saying, except for this point, this problem predated this presidency.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
And if you start to, if you look historically at efforts in the federal government to even understand the issues around gun violence, they have been systematically cut for at least a decade and a half. So this is an ongoing problem.
And you also have to marry that research with the other research, which we conduct but we don't do anything about as a nation, is the flow of guns and trade. We absolutely ignore that issue. The president constantly talks about with regards to immigration and violence, how these gangs are coming into the U.S. They're coming to the U.S. with U.S.-made guns. And there are hundreds of thousands of them that end up in Mexico and other places as part of the gun trade, which we don't. That's an issue, too, of how people are accessing. It's only something like a minute percent of the country are firearms owners, but they do own a lot. Whether that's a cause for red flag, that's more questionable. You have to separate the sportsman from others who are buying guns for nefarious means. But again, I think if we don't have these systems, and I'm talking about databases, I'm talking about legal systems, under better accountability, then none of this is going to be effective.
Yes, but I want to go back to my argument, if that's what it is, my discussion with Bob. and that is, we have one president. And this president has been in the arms of the NRA, and we know it. That while we can discuss all the science we want and all the discussion we want, right now, in this country, it is this president who has led us into this crisis and who has to be held responsible. And as he goes to visit, the sites of these horrible shootings, those folks down there, they know it. And they're ready for him, and they're going to welcome him with nothing but disdain. And I think that's incredibly important for us to remember. This is political leadership. And he's it right now. Forget about anybody who came before.
It's true, and he has 30 million reasons to be very supportive of the NRA. If you think about the contributions to his campaign, and I think it's important our listeners don't lose track of is the amount of money that the NRA has pumped into the politics of this country, because that's another sub theme. But I think it plays a huge role in everything that you're saying. The lack of leadership from the president and the administration, absolutely, and the fact that he has set a tone, which is coming back to us in truly evil ways, is another problem.
Yeah, I would just simply say it isn't it's a lack of leadership, all right. Although he's leading, but he's leading in the wrong direction.
Chris,
Well, I mean, I do agree he's leading largely in the wrong direction, but I go back to what Robert said. I don't think it's fair to really pin the entire problem on him. I just it predates him. Even if he had taken, fairly dramatic action at the start of his presidency, there'd still be, 400 million guns out on the streets. I don't know that, we'd still be having this problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a really complex
problem, and I think to just throw out simplistic things, mm-hmm.
simplistic things
to blame, I think it doesn't really help very much. I think it actually just kind of adds to the anger and the confusion and the frustration.
Well, I am angry.
You should be.
I'm very angry, and I do lay it at the doors of this president, who all of a sudden is discovering that there may be some things that we can do when the folks in the White House and the pollsters are seeing how angry the American people are, and the polls are showing that. All of a sudden, we're seeing some leadership in a direction which is very different. No, I don't think it's simplistic, Chris. I would take great exception to what you've said there. I think it's quite clear that this president is responsible for what's happening.
And I think the voters and the people who in communities who are affected by this are also very right in holding, their representatives and their Congress accountable. And it's a matter of who actually will separate from the party. And I think it is absolutely weak and abhorrent that, it's still people are not mobilized to, actually have a conversation and say it's not just about my state, it's about this country.
We are just coming up on a break, so let's take a break and we will come back and continue this conversation. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We know people are very passionate on this topic. We do ask you to be to keep the letters short and to the point and on the topic. And if you can, just proofread them and make sure there aren't any abbreviations so we can get to as many as we possibly can. Again, we do welcome your letters at panel@wamc.org. Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, Chris Churchill, and Bob Griffin all make up the panel this morning. We will continue our conversation after this short break. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, Chris Churchill, and Bob Griffin. We welcome your letters. panel@wamc.org. All right, we have letters like these. Stephanie writes, we need to ban all assault weapons and high-capacity magazines. We already have background checks and red flag laws. Take too long to enact, let alone enforce. We only have those red flag laws in 17 states, but okay. We are only admiring the problem by continually describing the issue. We don't need more research, only political courage. That from Stephanie. Jamie writes, you cannot have gun control unless you have control of guns. So how about this proposal? If you want to have an assault weapon to assist the government in time of crises, you may buy one and then deposit it in the community armory. Then, in case of an alien invasion or North Korea paratroopers, the armory can be opened and you can grab your freedom stick. If you want an assault weapon to defend yourself and your organization against the USA, you can have one. Trust me, it's your own for your own good and the good of your innocent families. If you think you can stand up against the U.S. military, you're only heading for an early grave.
So kudos to the Red Dawn reference there.
Yes, very nice.
And I will also note that the earlier letter about research is I would push back respectfully that, we've changed the tenor of the debate by actually starting to link guns and guns violence
with
to
research.
Public health. And those are the issues. And I don't disagree that this is something that could be resolved politically through the regulatory and legal process. But at the same time, I think understanding some of these other issues will continue to benefit us.
Mm-hmm. Diane writes, red flag legislation is useless unless these assault weapons are completely off the streets. Serious consequences with imprisonment should be the norm if anyone is caught possessing these deadly assault weapons. Vincent writes, good morning, panel. Could somebody definitively define domestic terrorism? If one does not have an agenda, i.e. politics, religion, race, but it is just mentally deranged or hateful, could that be still considered domestic terrorism? It seems to me this term is being bandied about rather freely. Thank you for clarifying that for me. Bob, this seems to be in your bailiwick.
Yeah, there are actually definitions that the FBI and DHS use to define domestic terrorism. In a situation where there isn't an underlying ideology or group process, it's not viewed typically as domestic terrorism.
So, okay, and we're going to get a little bit more into that when we talk about the opening of the FBI case in Gilroy, California. We'll talk about that in a moment. Barbara says, since Trump, quote, won the presidential election, I have found my physical and mental health decline. My blood pressure goes up with every daily tweet, and the gun control issue has thrown me over the edge. For my own well-being, I now have to limit my time on Facebook and social media. Searching for something positive to do yesterday, I find myself on Gabby Gifford's website. There I found solace I was looking for, such an amazing person. In addition to a wealth of information such as legislation and gun reform, there is also a listing of gun control groups for gun owners, proving that two seemingly opposite groups can work together. Ms. Gifford's namesake organization is Minnesota Gun Owners for Safety and Colorado Gun Owners for Safety. And you can find out at GabbyGifford.org.
I do. If I could just opine on that, if I could, Joe, the
opine away, sir.
I agree with her about the tone and the sort of the PTSD that I find myself just listening to the news. It's bad enough where I leave the TV on for my dog when I go to work, and I purposely don't leave CNN or any of the news.
The Cartoon Network.
I actually leave the NFL channel on because I think it's actually less violent than what she's experiencing or listening to through the course of a day. But I agree with her. I mean, I also experience that, and I purposely try to disconnect because I just can't handle the stream of bad news that seems to be almost continuously right now across our airways.
And just to piggyback a little bit on that, I do think she's right that there is room for common ground. I do think there are a lot of gun owners who are okay with restrictions. I talk to a lot of – I have gun owners in my family, and none of them really oppose any sort of ban on larger magazines. You know, they're all fine with that. They don't see them as a necessary tool for either hunting or self defense. And you know, to me that just seems like not an easy place to start, but a good place to start.
And I think it's a healthy practice too, just to talk. You know, get away from a screen and get in front of people in your community and make a little time to have, you know, the discussion and find out, you know, where if you want to do some positive community work, there's tons of opportunities to do that. And those factor into the social determinants of health that could or could not lead to violent or positive behavior.
And we also have a lot of kittens and puppies that need to be adopted if you're looking for unconditional love.
Yeah. So just giving a little scratch under the chin.
Yeah, that's right. Make you feel better.
Yeah.
Kevin writes, since Moscow Mitch has no spine, can individual states pass it on their own? Think of the political backlash of an unstable person committed a horrific crime in a state that voted no on the law, and it was deemed that person met the requirements to take the weapon. That would be the tipping point.
We do know that when individual states pass sensible laws, there's always a state next door or two down the line where people will you know, just basically do what they want, and New York will get guns from, you know, West Virginia or wherever they're coming from, and that's the way it happens.
Allison writes, would mass shooters use another weapon? Just some thoughts. Thank you for discussing the Chicago shootings. Gun violence and mass shootings are part of the same conversation. Excuse me. And they are not mutually exclusive. But you mentioned the Boston bomber, a bomber. Do you think individuals who commit mass bombings would carry out similar acts without guns? I don't mean to suggest do not enact gun control, but I keep thinking about the mass shooter terrorist versus the bomber terrorist, where the overlaps are in these individuals.
Yes, I think they clearly would. I think they would for sure. But I also think it takes a lot more effort to carry out something like that. I mean, you know, and they're easier, a little bit easier to stop. I mean, one of the things that's so disturbing about the Dayton massacre is that, you know, it was stopped in 30 seconds, mm-hmm. you know, and it's and 29 people were still wounded. I mean, that's just, you can't get there any faster than that. Mm-hmm. The good guy with a gun, so to speak. I mean, that's the model almost. I mean, 30 seconds is fantastic, and it still didn't made a difference, but mm-hmm. it could have been a lot worse. But 29 people is still a heck of a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. It really is.
And you also it is a lot more difficult to make an effective explosive device than I think people let on.
Mm-hmm. And it also takes premeditation. Yes. I mean, a longer term premeditation, where a lot of these. Some of these, anyway, just seem very spur of the moment. Mm-hmm. You know, the frustration overwhelms somebody, and they go out and do something mm-hmm. awful.
Right, and I think, you know, that's all part of the conversation too. I mean, what makes a person decide to do this? This is the constant question we always grapple with, whether it's a diagnosed mental health issue or just a really bad day, which we see happen. It's. Again, sometimes these things happen without a red flag, so to speak.
I'm still reeling a little bit from this idea, though. We were talking about this yesterday. Cesar Sayoc sent out these pipe bombs to politicians mm-hmm. that he didn't like, got 20 years in prison as opposed to a life sentence because the judge ruled that he knew they wouldn't go off. I don't know how you determine that.
You can't.
I question the legal standing of that judge right now. I mean, mm-hmm. there is no logic behind that position to me. Mm-hmm. He mailed those devices thinking that they would go off and intended to kill people. He should have gotten a life sentence.
It was also mm-hmm. a form of terrorism too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. Terrorism. I mean, if we're going to go down this road, those laws have to be strengthened, mm-hmm. don't they? Gun control is the subject line in Charles's note, who said, could any of you address the question of the Second Amendment? I wonder why there is no mention of amending it. What am I not getting here?
There's no mention
you're not
of
getting, what you're not getting is the United States Senate.
Well,
no,
it's politically,
it ain't going to happen.
Exactly. It's politically. I mean, if you can't pass, you know, background checks, then you're not going to amend the Second Amendment. Mm-hmm. That's not within the realm of political possibility at the moment.
Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, Chris Churchill, and Bob Griffin make up our panel this morning. We do welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We're going to take a brief break. Did you want to say something, Chris?
I was just going to say, and you don't need to amend it to enact, you know, regulation that would do something. It's just not necessary. Mm-hmm. The Second Amendment, the Heller decision, allows for regulation. It's very clear about that.
Mm-hmm. All right. With that word in, we'll take a break. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We welcome you joining us, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org, and we welcome your letters, Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, Chris Churchill, and Robert Griffin on the panel this morning. Okay, so let us go to some, we're going to stay on subject for a moment, but let me go to some letters first and then we'll move on to that. Lou says, you can blame Trump, but remember this issue predated him. How come Fox News Channel gets a pass? They've done more to demonize immigration than anyone.
Again, I think it's just too complicated an issue to point the blame at anyone network, anyone politician. I mean, I think you're talking about broad cultural issues that have been fermenting for a long, long time. And I don't know if Trump is maybe more of a symptom of that than anything else. I just, you know, and to blame Fox News, I mean, it's like people blaming a certain musician when something happens. I mean, crazy people will latch onto things sometimes, and it's not necessarily fair or helpful to draw a straight line between the act of a madman and, you know, some media person or political figure we don't like.
Gloria writes, complex issue, I don't agree. Every other country has the same issues we have, but those countries have sensible gun laws. We do not. The ridiculous interpretation of the Second Amendment is literally killing us. That from Gloria in
the state of Vermont. We move on.
But hold on, Joe. Before we move off of that, I think this is emblematic of the problem, though, because it becomes a zero-sum conversation with both sides saying that the other side is so stupid that they have no standing and there's no rational position that they will accept, and that hardens the wall, which makes any compromise damn near impossible. So I mean, the writer's letter itself points to me about the complexity of this problem.
All right, we go to William, who says, "Hi, panel. The Republicans are once again proving themselves to be total hypocrites by claiming the problem to be mental health, not guns. Let's not forget that one of the first actions taken by the Trump administration was to make it legal for people with severe mental health issues to purchase firearms." We go to Sue, who says, "In New York, you can join New Yorkers Against Gun Violence, or more nationally, Moms Demand Action." Jill says, "A red flag law would not have prevented El Paso. Not until the guy wrote his manifesto, which was only hours before his rampage, did anyone know he was a danger to others. He also wrote the manifesto after he had already bought the gun, which is why nothing came up in a background check. We need stronger controls."
Yeah, and it raises the issue of so how much do you want government monitoring your postings, either on social media or in other places? And I think that's where, you know, that's another part of the discussion that's going to have to occur, is that as you're starting to look at people who may be sliding into extremist positions that may lead to violence, mm-hmm. how do we do that but at the same time protect our own civil liberties?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I see extremist things written on Facebook and Twitter all the time. Mm-hmm. 99.8% of those people will not go out and do something horrible. Mm-hmm. You know, how do you differentiate between the people who will and the people who won't?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, this may be taking a step a little too far, but I mean, if the president truly wants to de-escalate some of the temperature linking violence and immigration, I mean, he could clean out members of his own staff that have led to this. I point to Stephen Miller and Kellyanne and some others who I think have made the situation even worse. So I will say to one of the earlier letters that I think there are things the president could do if he was really committed to this.
So finally we're on the right track, I believe.
Sorry, it only took us an hour.
Yeah. No, finally we're on the right track. Look, these guys, Stephen Miller and all the rest, I've made this point before, I'll make it again. They work for the president. The president is the guy who hired them. The president is the guy who keeps them. It is the president who is at fault here. And Chris, you and I can fight about this all day long. It is not that complex.
Well, then how do you explain that the mass shootings are happening before he was president?
Well, because they were. And I have no problem with that.
So if he's solely to blame, I mean, was it just because he existed as a human being that he's to blame for it? I mean,
no, he is, Chris. He is the president now.
Now he is, right.
Yeah, no, he's the president now. We're on crisis now. All of a sudden, this guy who has set the emotional temper of this country and the rest of it to the height it is saying, oh, maybe there's something we can do. That's disgusting.
I'm not saying that I think he's made the situation better. In fact, I do believe he's made it worse. I mean, he is toxic. But Sandy Hook wasn't his fault. Right. I mean, Columbine wasn't his fault. This has been going on for my entire lifetime. I remember these things going on when I was a kid and seeing them. People act like, you know, the current generation of 20 somethings are the only people who have lived through this their whole lifetime. This has been going on for a long, long time.
Chris,
and it is getting worse. And
yes, it is. And he's the guy who's supposed to be the leader right now. You can go back and you can look at everything that has happened in this country. But right now, he is the president. And right now, he's changing his mind because the people in the White House are saying, uh-oh, boss, we're in real trouble here.
Is he changing his mind?
Do we know that he's changing his mind?
Well, let's put it this way. He is saying that there are things that we can be doing that he is dead set against all along. So come on, you know.
Well, there was a meeting. There was a meeting after, I forget which mass shooting it was. I was at Parkland, where, you know, he seemed very open to all sorts of measures that that were previously off the table. And then, you know, he met with the NRA and suddenly he no longer backed all those
exactly, things. Exactly. Look, he's the guy. He's the leader. You're absolutely right. He has talked the talk before, but this is time for leadership, and I hold him personally and absolutely responsible.
You see, now while I don't disagree that we have never seen a person in the White House who has such a degree of presidential Tourette's as the current occupant of the White House, I will say though that there are other elements that I think that are at play here, including elements of our own society like the use of social media and how we link as communities, breakdown of sort of traditional support agencies within communities that play into this. Certainly, the access to weapons that I think is very different than it was in the past. We have fundamentally changed the standing of the constitutional amendment about gun rights to make it almost the premier right of American versus just one among many. So I think there are other elements that are at play here that we're still trying to catch up to figure out what's going on.
Well, there certainly are. However, he is the president right now. He has it within his power to advance proposals that he doesn't just talk about, that he does something about. He's the guy who has inflamed the discussion and gone to his base again and again and again. Nope, I'm not buying any of it.
No disagreement with the fact that he has inflamed his base. I really don't. I think the comments after Charlottesville empowered actions that a decade and a half ago would have been so shameful that you could never have brought to the streets. Or would have been so fringe. At the same time, though, I think there are other elements here. And honestly, the sad part, though, Alan, is that I think this problem, it predated this current administration. I think it's going to still be with us even after the administration changes.
But he's making it worse. And Robert, you very correctly brought up before the governor's four-point program. Those are 4 points that this president isn't going to go for. You can't have it both ways. You can't say it happened before and so therefore it's okay. It's not this guy's fault. It is his fault. And he's the leader right now and he needs to do something. And the very 4 points you brought up that the governor has talked to us about in the past, they're on the table right now and he could do something, but he's not.
So when the president tweeted yesterday, did George Bush ever condemn President Obama after Sandy Hook? President Obama had 32 mass shootings during his reign. Not many people said Obama is out of control. Mass shootings were happening before the president even thought about running for president.
I've already spoken to that.
See, the problem I have with that statement, though, Joe, is that, you know,
I mean, that's
Bush never
that's the
attacked
president.
Obama on Twitter the way Trump has. I mean, he's made it so personal that you can't go back and look in sort of our history to say, you know, what can we compare to? Unless maybe if you go to, you know, the period before the Civil War. But I think it's sort of a false correlation between the Bush Obama versus what Trump has done to Obama.
We go to Nancy, who says, since Trump's claim is that gun violence is a mental health problem, wouldn't it follow that he'd be saying that we need to put a high priority on funding for mental health care?
You know, and from my standpoint, I think that anybody in Congress who doesn't start to put money back into mental health care isn't going to take the problem seriously.
John says no bans on assault rifles won't completely eliminate mass shootings, but that's not the point. They will reduce the severity and frequency of mass shootings. That is the point. We got this from Carolyn, who says, I don't understand why the failure of Congress to act on gun regulation is commonly characterized as a failure of courage, guts, or resolve. Isn't it simply greed and ambition?
Well, we could add that to the list, too, because I don't disagree with that.
It's also, to a degree, I mean, it's also self-preservation. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of these congressmen are from districts where that would be the end of their careers.
Tom says, Alan is 100% correct in his assessment. There are hundreds of studies showing that people will do crazy things if there is a social acceptance by crowds of folks to do these crazy things, and a certain unnamed president is stoking certain folks to do these crazy, hateful, and inhuman acts. Neil says, I keep watching in vain for Trump's approval rating to go down. Sexual predator, who cares? Child abuser, we're good with that. Flaming racist, no problem. White nationalist, no way. One of the biggest and most depressing takeaways from the Trump presidency is what it has told us about a shocking number of our countrymen.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that.
Right. Everyone's nodding in the studio.
Every line that would have brought down a past administration, he just sort of blows through, and we make apologies for it.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We have a good group this morning. Chris Churchill is here, Jen Smith, Robert Griffin, and Alan Chartok. We'll continue with this after news with Rick Graff. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. All right. We have Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, Chris Churchill, and Bob Griffin. We are going to move on to some other topics and sort of move away, although not really, because I want to talk about two issues. One is the California terror probe. So we've been talking a lot about El Paso. We've been talking a lot about Dayton. We do now add to this what happened in California at the Garlic Festival. You will remember this happened on July 28th, left three people dead, more than a dozen injured. It seems like it was a long time ago, but it wasn't. The FBI said Tuesday that it had launched a domestic terrorism investigation into the shooting at this California festival that left three dead. Investigators say they found that the 19-year-old gunman had delved into violent ideologies and held a list of possible targets across the country, including religious institutions, political organizations linked to both major parties, federal buildings, and courthouses. That, according to John Bennett, special agent in charge of the FBI San Francisco office, he declined to identify them. The gunfire was at the Gilroy Garlic Festival, an event that draws tens of thousands of visitors annually. It sent terrified visitors fleeing from a chaotic scene. Among the dead were two children. That from the Washington Post. Bob, this brings us back to, you gave us a definition earlier of domestic terrorism, and I'm interested then of how do you make that stick then?
Make it stick in terms of prosecution. Correct. Or the investigation? Why don't I talk the investigation
first?
Let's
do the investigation.
Sure. What the investigation, and this will be a task force that has representatives from not only the FBI, but the ATF, alcohol, tobacco, firearms, and explosives, local police, state police, and what they've been doing is going through all of the records and starting to draw a better understanding of the sites that the shooter has gone on, you know, who he has been talking to. And I would imagine that given some of the in-between words that weren't said in the statement, but I would have pulled out, is that they're starting to see links with other groups. So that they're starting to see maybe the potential for collaboration or even ideological collaboration that they need to look into, because it becomes bigger than a single person. Now, when they go into court, the issue of domestic terrorism can take on additional charges versus just the serious charges of premeditated and murder and murder in the first degree and those issues. And it allows a federal prosecutor to start to look at things like the death penalty. So the charges of terrorism does carry a very different standard.
When it comes then to, I mean, obviously you think this is the right thing to do, to open this investigation?
No, I absolutely do. I absolutely do. And it's going to take some time, but to really dig through and understand the network. And a lot of this network isn't just in open source. Most of this is on the dark web and on Tor. And they're going to have to dig into a lot of sites that are frankly really grim. And when I talk dark web, for people that aren't associated with that, there's a whole other area of the web that is shielded, that is purposely developed to be shielded from from authorities, and you find things like child slavery and drug sales and weapon sales and really dark ideologies. And this is where you start to see these individual actors start to coalesce in a group, and that empowers them, and it empowers them to act. And I think that that adds to a lot of the – it has added to the violence that we've seen not only in the United States but across the world.
Betsy writes, you were discussing who is responsible for the advancing of hateful rhetoric and gun violence. Trump just said there is no political will to ban assault weapons, meaning he has not the will and neither does the Republican Party, even though the majority of people are for it. Mitch McConnell, most notably, has blocked all legislation for gun control, and the president is leader of the Republican Party, so he is responsible. Just because he wasn't earlier has no bearing. He's attached himself to this party. He and the party are one, so he is responsible. Fox News is also, as they seem to be, in the pocket of the gun lobbies and influence the president to an outrageous degree. Norm says, saying that it predates Trump and therefore he cannot be held accountable would be like saying that Obama didn't have to address fixing the economy that was damaged by previous administrations. Obama owned the problem and the fix. Trump owns the gun law problem and the fix. His words fuel it. He owns it.
Just to go back to the first letter, I'm just looking at a Gallup poll from late last year, and the headline is "Majority in the U.S. now oppose ban on assault rifles." So, I mean, it's not necessarily the case that the majority of Americans would just are completely in favor of this. I mean, that goes back to what I was saying about it being complex. I mean, there are a lot of different political winds, and maybe this weekend starts to change some of that. But, you know, politicians respond to their constituents. And
they should anyways.
Well, yeah, they should. And I think for the most part they do, because it's about self-preservation. Well, you know, if they feel that people will vote a certain way, then they will respond to that.
Alan?
They're not people of courage. You know?
I think that's what's happening. You take a look at the latest polling on gun violence in America and where constituents want it. It has changed significantly since what you're quoting, Chris.
Well, there are things that people do support, like universal background checks. I mean, that kind of easy stuff, there's overwhelming support for that stuff.
Well, as fear takes over, and it does, and as people say, well, you know, I fear for myself and for my kids and my family and my parents, I think things are changing, and I think they're changing radically, and we see it happening. I would caution you not to go back too far on the polling on assault weapons, because I think things are changing significantly now.
So I just want to go back to the idea of the this domestic terrorism investigation. And one of my questions, I guess, for you, Bob, too, would be, so what happens ultimately in a case like this where, you know, the suspect, so you're doing more of like a postmortem versus, you know, trying to track someone down. So what could the possible wider impact be of this investigation?
So if the Bureau can start to identify key players and organizations that may be responsible for the adding to the terrorist attack, then there are other laws in the book. There's the RICO statutes. They can actually start to do wiretap and go to the courts through the FISA courts to be able to be more proactive in looking at who is part of that group and who is accessing it. So there is that reactive and proactive element that comes with it. And if once you've identified a group that can be identified as a domestic terrorist group, it puts you into a different category as far as government agencies' ability to monitor what is happening there.
Tammy writes, let me not underestimate the powerful position that Trump is in as president of the nation. Rather than being a true leader in uniting the nation, he has fueled the fire of racism and white supremacy. Paul writes, watching The Daily Show last night, Trevor Noah made many heartfelt and important notes about the shootings and gun violence in America. One point above many others he made was that at its core, the Second Amendment was written and designed to protect people, though it has become only about protecting guns, which Paul says, I agree. Christopher writes, as a conservative gun owner and a Second Amendment supporter, I am also a gun control advocate. What I object to, with all due respect to Alan, is the continued strident blaming, especially of the president, which seems rooted in sour grapes over his winning more than the facts. The mainstream media continues to race bait and push extreme positions, which do more to divide this nation than anything the POTUS has said or done. While many of his statements are certainly cringeworthy, I feel that the mainstream media is twisting and taking statements out of context, does more damage to our nation and the honest conversation we need to have.
His best line in there is, while many of his statements seem cringeworthy, well, you can't have it both ways.
Right.
Either they're cringeworthy or they are not. And in this case, they are what is permeating the discussion in this country.
I'm not saying the media is completely blameless in this, but I do wonder if by reporting the president's cringeworthy mm-hmm. statements, are you then guilty? I don't know.
Yeah,
it certainly doesn't seem that way.
I'd like to know what gun control measures he would support, because he says he's a conservative gun owner who would support various measures. I mean, I do think there's room for common ground, but pointing fingers at each other is not the way to get there.
And if I could take that thread, Chris, for responsible gun owners, it's time to actually stand up and regain control of the NRA. That you can change as a member of the NRA, as a responsible gun owner, you can help force through policy plank changes in that organization that are desperately needed. So the call goes out to anybody who is a responsible gun owner to start to push on multiple different levels, not just the political level, but also with the NRA and other organizations to put in the real change that we need.
We got this from Maureen, who says, John Oliver in CNN broadcast Trump's remarks in the Florida panhandle to his question as to what to do about the invasion. The crowd chanted, shoot them. Trump laughed. He smirked, but okay, it's point taken. This clip should get more coverage since it shows his lack of morality. I've seen it a lot, so I don't know that it hasn't been.
Yeah, I have too.
Yeah.
I think it's gotten a lot of coverage, but
yeah, but I just compare
for the point.
I compare
yeah.
that position to what McCain did when somebody questioned Obama's whether
with citizenship.
With citizenship, which again I will note was in part pushed by Trump. Or even what Mitt Romney did when he was on the campaign trail. I mean, there are decent politicians in both the Republican and Democratic Party. Right now, they're just silent.
Yeah.
Mark says, I remember Obama after Sandy Hook asking Congress to send him anything that could potentially save one life. No one thinks legislation has to be perfect, just better. I liked give us something. Hank says, Chris, although school shootings, et cetera, have occurred before Trump was elected, since his presidency began, the amount of white nationalist-inspired shootings has been on the rise, and he has quietly removed most gun regulations.
True.
Well, I mean, yeah, I'm not, like I said, I'm, my argument is not that he is making the situation better. I just think to blame him for it alone is overly simplistic and not particularly helpful. I mean, when he's gone, if nothing changes, you know, in our culture and in the way we regulate guns, these things are going to continue. This is going to be a long-term problem.
Harrison says, I do agree that there should be more background checks. However, I do not like how when one of these things happens, how a lot of mainstream media talks about how it is a white male problem. I find that highly offensive. When a Muslim commits an act of terrorism, is it a Muslim problem? What about gang violence in African-American communities? Is it an African-American problem? No, because saying that would be racist, and rightfully so. I also feel like Trump is partially to blame, but I feel like saying that this is a white man problem is really racist.
What it is a young man problem, to be honest. I mean, the situation, some of these shooters that you know, from the weekend or from Gilroy. In some respects, I don't think their situation is all that different than what you see in poor neighborhoods in cities. You're talking about young men who are lost, who are disconnected, and they'll reach out to something toxic if there's nothing positive for them there. And I think, you know, I think that's kind of an under-discussed issue. There are just a lot of lost young men who have kind of a confused idea of what it means to be masculine, and you know, they're just lost. And when people are lost, they'll grab onto the wrong thing. I wish I could be more kind of.
Well, and again, I think that's why I stand by the idea. How do we quantify and qualify this if we're not looking at it, if we're not keeping track of, if we're not showing where maybe things have been effective? That's another part of the conversation we don't talk about. Because these issues have been going on for so long, like some communities have been a little bit more successful that with deterring and curbing some of the violence and reclaiming their neighborhoods. But if we don't share those models as well, you know, they can't be replicated.
And if you look at the efforts to combat violent extremism, when Trump came in, one of the things that the administration did is that they took domestic terrorism off the table and actually directed it towards foreign Islamic intervention. When you look, though, at programs that have been successful around the country, it's more than just the law. It's more than just public health. Mm-hmm. It's jobs creation. It's creating a safety network where people who feel so disenfranchised can actually go to, rather than going to the web and finding that handful of other nuts that are out there and then all of a sudden think that they are powerful.
Right. Mm-hmm. People are finding community in these chat, you know, on 8chan and the places like that, and that's mm-hmm. instead of finding it in their neighborhoods and mm-hmm. with their families and with all the things that people used to have to hang on to. Mm-hmm. I mean, that I think that's a crisis, and I think that's something that has to be part of the discussion.
And finally, we get this from Darren, who writes, "I'm sorry, but Bob is completely wrong about Fox News. Either Chris Hayes or Rachel Maddow, I forget, did a great piece on the perpetual language Fox uses for the invaders and invasion that has been going on for years now. The viewers hear it every day, and it does indeed stick."
I don't think Robert said anything like that.
I don't recall. I'll listen to the tape, and if I somehow impinged upon the great reputation of Fox News, I will recognize my error in the next time I'm on.
He is wearing a Hannity for President t-shirt, so everybody should be aware.
It's extra small, so it's like a tube top.
All right, let's go to other stories. And
we just spiked on the on the video. Sorry, Joe.
No, it's fine. We've got about 2 minutes left, so not a lot of time, but we'll talk quickly about Trump suing the state of California. You will remember that the state of California passed a law that said that if the president wanted to be on the ballot in the state of California, he would have to release his president's tax returns. Now the president and the RNC have filed a legal challenge to that California law. The federal lawsuits, which were threatened last week when Governor Gavin Newsom signed the bill into law, argued that the measure requiring presidential and gubernatorial candidates to release 5 years of tax returns runs afoul of the U.S. Constitution. The RNC suit, which includes the California Republican Party as a plaintiff, alleges a naked political attack against the sitting president of the United States.
I predict 5-4 Supreme Court in Trump's favor.
It is unconstitutional, I think, mm-hmm. so I don't think it'll stand. I mean, the Constitution is pretty explicit about who is qualified and who's not qualified to be on the ballot. Mm-hmm. Or
at the same time, though, it drives me crazy that, you know, I think anybody who's going to be president, we should understand right. where their financial interests are so mm-hmm. we can understand whether policies that are being put in place actually benefit them and their families. I think this
right.
is
if you're
going to
change a law, change that law.
I would absolutely. That's one of the ones that I would start with. This is one I find is unconscionable.
I think it'll be 7-2, Alan, so we can bet on that.
All right. Let's take – we're out of time. So we'll stop it there. But thank you very much to everybody. Alan, thank you.
Thank you,
Jen, best luck on your travels.
Thank you very much.
Very cool. We'll be keeping track of you. Chris and Bob, I know you're off next week, but we'll see you on the other side.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for the great letters today, too.
Yeah. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.